You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning. This is NPR News. I'm Chris Farrell, in today for Carrie Miller. We're going to dive into the contentious farm bill during this hour, but first, let's check in with Ken Rudin, the political junkie on the week in politics. Ken?
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. So, once again, we don't have much to talk about. But what I want to say, this week we have primary elections in, what, Arkansas, Georgia, Kentucky, and Texas. So what are you watching?
Well, you know, something as we saw, the first batch of primaries, which was 2 weeks ago, was all focused about Republicans and their loyalty or lack of loyalty to President Trump. So it was basically whether the Republicans would nominate candidates who could win in November. A lot of the focus was on John Blankenship in West Virginia. Last week, the focus was on women running in states around the country, whether they would the numbers of female candidates are breaking records everywhere, how they would do. The same thing is for tomorrow's primaries, especially in Georgia, where there's an African-American female lawmaker who's seeking the Democratic nomination for governor. Georgia has never elected a black nor a female governor, and we're watching that. It's called the battle between these two Stacys. There's two women named Stacy who are running for governor, and whether the Democrats have a shot at capturing that the governorship there. But that's most of it. There's also interesting that in Kentucky there are a lot of teachers who are running for office too. And given the fact that there are so many demonstrations around the country regarding lack of teacher pay or sufficient teacher pay and lack of sufficient contributions supplies in schools, it's going to be interesting to see how teachers fare in Kentucky.
So, and Kentucky was one of those states where the teachers went on strike, right, and marched onto the Capitol.
That's exactly right. Kentucky, Oklahoma, Arizona, there are a lot of these states there. And we talked about how women have made such a big difference in the 2018 political conversation, how gun control advocates are suddenly becoming more and more prevalent in the political discourse. And now we're seeing teachers as well. So there's a lot of coalitions of folks who are trying to make a difference in 2018. We'll see how teachers fare.
Okay, I know it's really early, but what's your gut check when it comes to the midterms with these primaries?
Well, you know, I mean, we have a long way to go. And of course, the fact that we couldn't even predict things on November, 5th, 2016. Yeah. So predicting 5 months away.
Well, that's why I put it in your gut check. What's your gut check here?
But my gut check tells me that the Democrats are in good shape. They need 23 seats to pick up control of the House, make Nancy Pelosi speaker once again. Whether Nancy Pelosi is the right person to lead the Democrats, that's another debate altogether. But I think the Democrats have a good shot at winning the House, assuming the Democratic anger and enthusiasm continues. But of course, things can change on a dime. We'll see what happens with foreign policy, with the Mueller investigation. We'll see what happens. In the Senate, it's going to be tougher, even though the Democrats only need a net gain of two. Most of the seats, most of the key state seats, are held by Democrats in Trump states, like Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota and Joe Donnelly in Indiana and Joe Manchin in West Virginia and John Tester in Montana. So Claire McCaskill in Missouri, another example. So I think the Democrats have an uphill battle for the Senate. They're probably nominally favored to take control of the House.
So, Ken, before I get to my next question, just want to make a call out. What issue would you like Ken to address? What is Congress doing or maybe not doing that puzzles you? Ken can sort it through for you, okay? So call us, 651.
Wait, says who?
Call us at 651-227-6000. Toll free, 800-242-2828 or online at talk@nbrnews.org. Right, so
Can I just interrupt for a second? I know you're going to be talking about the farm bill later in the week, but what happened on Friday in the House had nothing to do with the farm bill. The battle that John Boehner had in trying to control the conservatives in the House, his fellow Republicans, and the Freedom Caucus is the same battle that Paul Ryan has now trying to control these recalcitrant conservatives. It's even tougher for Paul Ryan because he's a lame duck speaker. Yes. He announced he's not running again, and he's not stepping down. So because there's no guidance, no true leadership in the House Republicans, something like the farm bill, which is needed so badly for so many groups, not only farmers, but low-income Americans as well, that actually fell hostage to the battle over immigration. So the failure of the farm bill on Friday had nothing to do with the farm bill. It had all to do with immigration and conservatives and unhappiness with Speaker Ryan. So that's a fascinating story to watch.
Well, and speaking of Speaker Ryan losing power in immigration, you also had the moderate Republicans looking like that they actually might force a vote on the Dreamers.
Well, so that's fascinating. Usually we always talk about how the conservatives are the ones who are really energized and the Freedom Caucus and the Jim Jordans and those kind of people, whereas the moderates basically are not known for backbone. They say, well, we're going to stand up, but we never stand up to leadership. But because many of these moderates are being targeted by Democrats in the fall, these so-called moderates, they're probably all conservative, but more moderate than most. They feel that they're under pressure from their constituents to protect the what we call the Dreamers from being deported. So these moderates have been talking to Speaker Ryan for weeks now, saying we must have a vote to protect, on DACA, to protect the Dreamers. And when the conservatives learned about this, they said, wait a second, we want our even more restrictive immigration bills to get priority, restrict more legal immigration from coming in the country, more border walls, money for the border wall, more enforcement for those who are caught. So the moderates did really stand up to Ryan, say we demand a vote on this, and when Ryan seemed to acquiesce in it, that enraged conservatives and said, wait a second, we want our own vote with a more conservative vote on immigration. That's the battle going on in the Republican Party.
All right. Then looking over the Trump administration, I want to shift to trade policy because we put a tough stance toward China. And now it appears that we're sort of backing off a little bit.
Isn't that something? I mean, the president certainly has his goals and he's made it clear what he believes in. And he's even before he was a candidate for president, Donald Trump has always railed against China and its unfair trade practices. It's predatory trade practices. So he steps up and comes up with this bill, this proposal for more tariffs made put on China. But then when we hear that this telecommunications company is hurting,
ZTE,
and it might hurt Russia,
yeah.
I mean, ZTE, right, exactly, and it may hurt China. And, of course, Trump needs China to do whatever influence it has on North Korea for that June 12th summit, which may or may not happen. And so the president backed down and said, well, something, we're going to put the trade wars on hold for now so we can work out some little deal with China. But there's a lot of strong rhetoric coming from the White House, but there's also a lot of backing down, which many conservatives feel undercuts the Trump economic message.
Well, and it's not just China. So the North American Free Trade Agreement, we were supposed to have that negotiation wrapped up. Now that's been put on hold. And the word is the administration is putting out there is that, look, we're looking for a good deal, not a deadline. But nonetheless, you have that. And then Trump tried to get Germany to back off the pipeline with Russia. And he'd back off on tariffs, probably targeted mostly at the German automakers. That doesn't seem to be going on. So we seem that we have a lot of turmoil on the trade front, which is just leading to confusion.
We do. And I thought something very indicative was a poll that recently came out in Germany that more Germans feel more confident of its relationship with Russia and perhaps economic ties with Russia than they do with Washington. And I think that is just, I mean, you talk about maybe the battles and the rhetoric between the U.S. and China, and that's to be expected. But when you hear the president attack, you know, allies like Britain, France, Germany, South Korea, Mexico on its unfair trade practices, it's just undercutting U.S. alliances with its allies. And if you want to be, you know, a conspiracy theorist, you say, well, this is great news for Vladimir Putin because it's just, you know, disrupting U.S. relationships with folks, you know, with countries that they've been close with. So there's a lot of things that are just a lot of people are scratching their heads. And while certainly the president is unpredictable and mercurial and all that, it's also more important than that in the fact that it's disrupting long-time alliances.
Okay, so then speaking of disruption, how serious are we to take? Or is this one of those things, don't get worked up, you know, we're kind of falling for it, where the Trump has successfully pushed the Justice Department to take a look at the FBI and were they spying on his campaign? I mean, this is another one of those twists in the story. How important?
It's extremely important. I mean, first of all, you have a president of the United States who tweets. Of course, they haven't been. I mean, as far as I remember, Washington and Jefferson, they never tweeted, right?
That's good history. I think you're right about that.
Yeah, no, well, I 7 years of high school, I should know my stuff. But I mean, the fact that the president would tweet something like, I hereby demand that the Department of Justice, you know, look into whatever, this, you know, this infiltration into the Trump campaign. The thought of the president of the United States hereby demanding action by the Department of Justice, you know, Carrie Miller always rolls her eyes when I do Nixon comparisons. And I guess, you know, but I mean, Richard Nixon, of course, tried to force his attorney general to fire Archibald Cox. And of course, we know how well that went. It led to the Saturday Night Massacre. But presidents don't do that, you know. They don't run. They don't. The Attorney General doesn't work for the President of the United States. They work for the government of the United States. So, and at the same time, it puts Rod Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General, into a very precarious position because he can't just say, "Well, no, I'm not going to do it," because if he does that, you know, he could get fired. And he, considering the fact that he is the guy who appointed Robert Mueller and is ostensibly overseeing the Mueller investigation, you know, Rosenstein doesn't want to be out of a job. So what he did basically says, you know, something I think is disgraceful, the thought of if there's any infiltration of the campaign, we're going to take the appropriate action. We're going to look into it. And I'm going to have the inspector general do an investigation, which is really probably the safest thing he could have done. But I don't know if it's going to mollify the president at all, because the president clearly feels, you know, he's been fueled by this, by right wing media and Fox News and others, that says basically that the Obama administration or the FBI put a spy into his campaign, when in reality there were two officials in the Trump campaign, Carter Page and George Papadopoulos, who basically was suspected of having ties to Russia, and that's why the FBI was talking to them, or at least, you know, an informant was talking to them. So the way the president sees the problem and what reality seems to be are two different things completely.
Well, Ken, it's always fun to check in with you and learn more about what's going on in D.C.
Chris, this is not fun. Okay, it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun. I do get riled up. It's Monday. I should calm myself because.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not talking to you on Friday. I'll talk to you later.
No, you don't want to. I'll see you next week. Thanks.
Ken Rudin is the political junkie.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828. Or tweet Carrie at @KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.